It's great to be together with you again today. And here we are, almost midway through the month of August, this final month of the summer. We've learned a lot about God in June, July, and thus far in August. The Bible has been our guide as we grasp that God is merciful, God is our rest, and God is our confidence. I hope that you enjoyed and benefited from this teaching. And there's so much more ahead for us here on God Is in the months that follow. I'm very excited about what is ahead, and I'll be here each and every weekday, Lord willing, to speak with you about who God is. As we run down the final stretch of summer for the next couple of weeks, leading into September, I want to share with you some insights into the nature and character of God from the Bible. This is wisdom that we have learned before, many months ago, but I want to bring it back to your attention again because we need this understanding firmly planted in our minds and hearts before we can go further up and further in to what God has in store for us in the future. Also, many of you are new to God Is and were not with us in the distant past, so you will appreciate these necessary perspectives on God. And so this week, I want to begin by telling you that God is holy. Let's turn our attention for the remainder of this week to the holiness of our great God. And to introduce this, I want to tell you about a conversation I had recently. I was out at a dinner party and seated next to someone who, when he found out that I was a pastor and also had this radio and podcast ministry, had a few opinions of God that he wanted me to know about. Here's what he said, quote, "I do not think God can really be defined. God is whoever someone wants him to be. Like, I have a lot of friends at yoga, and to them, God is like a spirit. My mom is Buddhist, so she has her God, and me, I am non-religious. God's pretty irrelevant in my life. But everyone should be able to decide for him or herself, and I respect everyone's choice, even if I decide differently. We should all respect and get along with one another." End quote. When he said this to me, it didn't necessarily surprise me, because I hear a version of this all the time. The emphasis is on God is whoever someone wants God to be. In other words, each person decides for him or herself who God is. And the other emphasis is on the rest of us accepting and respecting how someone else has defined God. In other words, once someone says to me, God is whatever they say, then I am supposed to have an attitude of respectful acceptance. So I am supposed to affirm what they believe about God by saying something like, "Good for you. I'm glad that you have figured that out about God." I'm supposed to smile an affirming smile and move on. What you say about God as you define God is right. What I say about God as I define God is right. And whatever any person decides about who God is will be right. Everyone is right in his or her own eyes, and none of the rest of us can challenge or question that belief. And certainly, how could we dare to suggest that a person's perspective on God is wrong, not accurate, and that it is a lie? It is unimaginable to most people today that we could suggest such a thing. Should you doubt me on this, try talking about God in your conversation with other people. Now, I responded to this gentleman I've told you about by saying that while I appreciated his honesty, which I did, I definitely do not think that God is whoever someone wants him to be, or that everyone has a correct understanding of God, and I asked if I could challenge some of his assumptions. He sort of winced, and then said that he was sure that whatever I believed about God could also be true, and why discuss such differences? He again affirmed his conviction that we all just need to go along to get along with one another, and he got up to use the men's bathroom. And, respecting other people's boundaries, no, I did not follow him in there to prove my point. But I did come home and pray for him. Really, I did. And as I prayed, I was reminded again of Romans chapter 1. If you have your Bible handy there with you, please turn with me to Romans 1. It's in the New Testament, and I want to begin reading in verse 20. This is now Romans chapter 1 and verse 20. "For since the creation of the world, God's invisible attributes, God's eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so they are without excuse." What is the Apostle Paul saying in this verse? He's saying that all people have seen who God is. They have seen God's invisible attributes, God's eternal power, and God's divine nature. How? through what has been made. In other words, through creation. By looking at the great landscape of nature, or looking up into a cloudless sky and seeing the sun, or in the nighttime, the moon and the stars. Ah, this tells us something about God. For a person to look around and witness the flowers blooming or the great big trees towering over us, or to watch an eclipse and to watch as a bird pulls a morning worm out of the ground. This all tells us that God is, and the creation tells us something about who God is. At the end of verse 20, Paul writes, "So they are without excuse," meaning when people consider what has been made and they ponder God's invisible attributes, God's eternal power and God's divine nature, then we have no reason to say about God anything that is not accurate and true. Let me give you an example. As I wrote this, it was a beautiful day outside, and I looked out my window and saw the clear blue sky and the trees in the yard, big, long, tall trees, and there was a powerful wind blowing that afternoon, and as those trees were swaying back and forth, and the wind not far from where I was writing, I got to thinking about this. I thought about God. First, that wind. Where does the wind come from? The Creator God. Who makes those trees grow so tall and mighty? I certainly do not go out and feed them. God does. And I can thank God for this. None of those big and strong trees have ever fallen onto my house, particularly when I am sitting in my house. And so, yes, what has been made, the divine creation, causes me to know something about God. And that is what Paul is saying. I have no excuse to say that God does not exist, or, well, that's not who I think God is. But the Apostle Paul continues to write in verse 21. I pick up the reading again at Romans 1 and verse 21, and I'll read all the way to the end of verse 23. "For even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures." That's Romans 1, verses 21 to 23. What is Paul saying here? Well, notice how he starts. They knew God. People who look at the creation do have an internal sense for who God is, because God has given that to them. But, and here is the key, they did not honor him as God or give thanks. I hope you see that right in verse 21. This happens a billion times over with people every day. People have an internal sense for who God is, but they do not honor God. They do not thank God for who he is. Instead, they do what? Well, Paul continues, "They became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools." That's verses 21 and 22. People start to speculate on God, and by doing so, they become fools. They move from wisdom to foolishness. Back to my example. Instead of me sitting here pondering the wonder and the glory of God in the creation of the wind and the trees and his protection over my home and me, I could say, well, let me do a little speculation here. God is the tree. The tree is God. And the reason those trees never sway all over and attack my roof is because the tree is God and God would never want to hurt me. Now, if I had such a thought process, that's definitely speculation and also, of course, foolishness. But that is exactly what people will do. Paul says it so plainly. Look at verse 23. This is now Romans 1 and verse 23 again. "And exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures." There is a great exchange made. Men and women take the glory of the incorruptible God and exchange who God is for an image in the form of corruptible man. That is, we remake God in our image. We take what is incorruptible and we make it corruptible. And Paul gives some examples. Man and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. Definitely, people worship man and animals all over the world. And these are just some examples. Paul was not giving an exhaustive list for how the true image of God gets smeared when we remake God in our image. There are all kinds of gods, small g, that people have made. One author put it this way: in the case of God, we distort our knowledge of him by replacing him with an image that we create ourselves. We distort the truth of God and reshape our understanding of him according to our own preferences. This is what the man that I spoke with at the party was really saying. Remember what he told me: I do not think that God can really be defined. God is whoever someone wants him to be, and everyone should be able to decide for themselves. Well, there you go. The Apostle Paul wrote to the Romans in AD 56, and here we are all these centuries later, and the same hold absolutely true today. And then, of course, in the culture in which we live, to suggest that it is sinful and wrong to replace God with an image that we ourselves create, to reshape God according to our preferences, is met with this, quote, "I respect everyone's choice, even if I decide differently. We should all respect and get along with one another," unquote. In other words, you are not free to challenge me on how I have reshaped God into my image, and if you try, you are being disrespectful. This week on God Is, I want to tell you that God is holy. We're going to discuss the holiness of God, but I have given all of this as an introduction because the main objection of people when they attempt to remake or reshape God in their image is to do away with God's holiness. Sinful people have no interest in being holy. None. And so they must remake God to be holy less. Holy L-E-S-S. Holy less. Nobody wants God to be holy. They want to take away the holiness of God. But beginning tomorrow, we will learn that God is holy. So join me again tomorrow for God Is.